All right, you can have a seat. Good morning. Welcome to Genesis. We are so glad you're here hanging out with us. I got a couple of young people I want to introduce to you this morning. This is Stephen Lancaster and Kelsey Gimmer, and I'm excited to announce that they are going to be spending their summer with us, serving us as summer missions interns. We're really grateful to the Missouri Baptist Convention for providing this. They're actually going to fund these two people to be with us this summer. Get that out of my pocket. It was making my wet. Anyway, I'll move on. They're going to be hanging out with us. I know you're embarrassed now. You're like, I don't know what to do with that, do I? We're still working on this. One of the things we got to work on right away is the pink shorts, especially when we found out this morning. Kelsey pointed out that a pink shirts with red shoes and shirt doesn't match. It just doesn't work. And so we'll work on that this summer. Anyway, Stephen is, a lot of you know Stephen. Stephen's parents are part of our church here. And Stephen's going to be working primarily with our teenagers this summer, leading stuff for them, helping to build that ministry. He's also going to be, both of them will have a pretty big leadership roles on our mission trip next week, all that stuff. And then Kelsey is going to be working primarily with our kids, and her big job, massive job, is to get us ready for Genesis Kids Clubs, which we do in July. And these kids clubs are a major effort that we have to develop relationships in a community, to get to know people, to connect with families, that kind of stuff. We want to do them all over Eureka, and she's going to be enlisting leaders and organizing stuff and gathering supplies and just doing all the stuff for that. And so I want to bring them out here and introduce them to you this morning. I also wanted us to spend our prayer time today to pray for them in their ministry. And I want to encourage you at the end of service, go up, meet them, get to know them. They didn't know I was going to tell them to do this, but they're going to stand out there at the information table at the end of service. It's, you just go by and introduce yourself to them. And if you have teenagers, if you have kids, or if you serve in any one of those ministries, make sure you pop by and introduce yourself to them, all right? So join me as I pray for them in their ministry this summer and their work with us, all right? Lord, we're thankful to you for your grace and your mercy and all that you do in our lives. And Lord, as a church, when you send people our way who have the opportunity to lead and to be part of what we do here, I just pray that you will always raise up the right people. And I thank you that you've sent these two young people to us this summer to invest part of their lives in serving under the people we already have, our elders, our other leaders, but serving alongside them and leading our teenagers with Stephen, leading kids with Kelsey. And I just, my prayer is that you will prosper them, that you will give them a lot of success, they will have a great time, and Lord, as a result, we'll see both their lives grow, their commitment to you, their understanding of their call develop, and at the same time, we will see our ministry in and around Genesis grow and develop as well. We thank you for summer and what it brings and the opportunities we have to live our faith, live mission here, and we just pray that we will do that well and honor you. In your name I pray, amen. Thanks, guys. Give them a hand, all right? Also, there's just a lot going on, and I want to point out a few things in your worship folder. It's always kind of like when you have announcements, where do you put them? And I heard a guy say once that it's good to go ahead and stop and announce things that are important because doing community, being part of the community of faith is also an act of worship. So we are worshiping by living faith together through the stuff that's going on here. Obviously, we start a mission trip next week. If you're part of that, make sure you know what's going on. There was an email that went out. If you didn't get that, see the Lancasters. If you have stuff to donate, you saw the trailer out there this morning. If you brought it, make sure we get it loaded. If you didn't get it here this week, bring it next week. If you're not sure what to donate, there's a table out there that will tell you all that. And also, we've started this new online community, Koinonia, and it started off great. There's a bunch of you who've already registered. But if you haven't gotten online or you don't even know what I'm talking about, let me encourage you to swing by the table out in the foyer where the computers are set up this morning and find out what we're doing, and then get yourself registered online, because it's just a great way to stay connected, to know what's going on, to interact with people, and to build community online. And so Koinonia is the name of that, and we will have a way for you to learn more about that. Also, if you're headed on vacation anytime soon, I just am excited and thrilled that we have provided an opportunity for the times where you get away that you don't separate. We've talked about this, separating in the idea of Sabbath, separating rest from worship. Because when God gave his people the Sabbath, the idea was that they would rest and worship, and that would reorient their life to God. And what we do so often is we get away and we rest, we vacation, but we forget about God. We don't go to church and we just kind of disconnect from faith altogether. We miss church because we're gone. And what we want to do is we want to support you and encourage you that when you are away, resting, Sabbathing, you know, getting away with your family, we want you to have worship experiences so you're still combining the idea of rest and worship so that that experience can help you reorient your life towards God. And so we have these available there at the information table. We have the first two out ready to go. We'll have the next two out hopefully next week so that you'll have as many as four of those that you can do during the summer. And whether you get away four different times or if you're going on like a week-long vacation, you can do them all during the week. Pick those up. We also have CDs to go with them, and you can find out about that out there. We're going to be baptizing in a couple weeks, and so if you have not been baptized but you would like to participate in that, our game plan is to head to the river right after church on the 13th and baptize there. And so if you would like to participate in that, give me a call or stop me after service. Let's talk about it, and we'll get things rolling with that. And then the last thing I'll point out is that we are going to be taking our students, our youth, to youth camp. It's going to be a great camp at a place called Logan Valley, which is it's just an amazing place. And let me encourage you, if you have teenagers, start considering taking kids there. If money is an issue, do not let it be. We will find a way to get scholarships and help if that will help you get your kids to camp. So talk to me about that. But we want to take a real big group. We got about a two and a half week window for kids to think through this and register. We have forms out there. You can also find the form on our blog at genesisreka.com or on Koinonia. So you can download it there. And so lots going on this summer. Summer's crazy, but it's also a great time for us to do a lot of cool ministry and a lot of cool stuff together. We've been preaching through the Old Testament book of Nehemiah. Great book of the Bible. We're almost towards the end. In fact, there's only two messages left. As we look at the book, it's a story. And basically at the beginning of the story, what takes place is that for 140 years, the city of Jerusalem, which is all throughout the Bible a picture of the city that's supposed to be a picture of what it looked like for God's people to know him, to love him, to worship him, to gather together, to raise families, to care for each other. It was supposed to be a picture of that as God loved his people, he blessed them, and as they honored God and lived their lives for him, but they did not do that well. He was faithful, they were faithless. As a result, they experienced his judgment, and for 140 years, the city has actually been in shambles, it's been broken down, the walls have been torn down, the temple had been destroyed, and the people that were left there lived in fear. They did not have a safe place to raise family, they did not have a safe place to do faith. And God raises up this guy named Nehemiah, who at the beginning of the book of Nehemiah lives in Susa, which is the capital of the Persian Empire, about 1,500 miles away. And he feels called by God, though, to return to his home city and lead the people in rebuilding the walls so that Jerusalem once again would be a safe place to live, a safe place to raise families, a safe place to worship their God, a safe place to live out their faith. And the result being that Jerusalem would then again be this place that's a little picture of what heaven on earth might look like. As there is one God, those people live for their God, and that God blesses his people. And so Nehemiah comes back. He encounters all kinds of opposition, all kinds of struggles, but the outcome is that they miraculously rebuild these walls that are about 5 miles long, 8 feet wide, 8 feet high, in 52 days. For 140 years, they couldn't pull it off, and they are able to pull it off in 52 days. And the outcome is that even the people who live outside the city, who are persecuting them, who are trying to run them down, at the end of this project, take a step back, and they go, this couldn't have happened unless God was part of it. And they know that God was involved with his people, blessing his people and caring for them. Well, after the walls are built, the next big event that takes place in the story is that now they have this safe place to come, and they start opening the Bible. They start reading the scriptures. They start coming together as the people of God and listening to the scriptures preached, proclaimed. They begin to sing together. They begin to worship. Their hearts are stirred. And now that they have this safe place to do life, to do ministry, to live their faith, now God reaches deep inside the hearts of the people and he brings a revival, this awakening of spirituality into the lives of the people who live in and around Jerusalem. And now they have come to a point where they are really ready to live out God's call, God's purpose, God's mission in their life. And as that goes on, they begin to be transformed in things like their willingness to do whatever it takes to honor God, to live out his mission. If you were here last week, we talked about that, that at this point in time, nobody was living in Jerusalem because it was so dangerous, but now the walls are built, and they do a lottery, and 1 out of 10 people move back into the city of Jerusalem. And that 1 out of 10 people who moved back into the city of Jerusalem, they all did it willingly, meaning they would have to leave their home, leave their land, and move their whole family to the city. They were farmers, so they would have to give up their livelihood to move to a place where they would have to learn a new trade. But they said, listen, whatever God wants us to do, we're in. And when if their name was drawn, they went willingly. They said, we are part of God's mission, and we will do whatever it takes. And so what we said is, or what we've done in this series, we've said this is what it looks like for God to build his people. That God is always at work, no matter where we're at, no matter where we live, God is at work. And what he does is, first of all, he raises up a structure, a people, where it is a safe place for people to explore faith, a safe place to raise families, a safe place to live out the gospel in community. And our desire as a church is to be that place. And from the day we started, Our dream for Genesis Church was that this would be a safe place for people to explore faith. That if you were new to the faith, that if you're not, you know, your relationship with God is just growing, or you're still trying to figure that out, that this would be a safe place to come hear the gospel, to interact with God, to figure out who he is, what it means to live for Jesus, what it means that God loves you and that Jesus died on the cross for you. And it would be safe for you to explore those things. That your kids would come and they would enjoy the experience, and that they would get connected to our Genesis kids, and they would go home and go, Mom and Dad, we want to go back there. We had a great time, and we're learning, we're discovering. And that as we do that together as a people, it's a safe place, that all of a sudden God begins to work in the hearts of people, that we create a structure, the walls, that is the structure of a church that gives us a safe place to do that, and that eventually God would begin to raise up and build his people. And so our story as a church is a little over 4 years ago. We began with a dream, 3 families. We just started this idea of planting Genesis, a new church in Eureka, for that purpose. And over the last 4 years, we have seen the walls built. The structure has been built where the church that those people, we would sit around in rooms and we would pray, we would read scripture, we would interact with the Bible teaches about what the church should look like. And we were praying, and just we began to put dreams on paper. That now here we are 4 years later, and the ideas that we put on paper as we were praying through this 4 years ago, we have become very much that church. And we give glory to God because he's been faithful. He's been good to us. And we feel like now the structure is built, and what's going on is that God is starting to build now his people. We are seeing a lot of you are pretty new. You've only been hanging out with us for 6 months, a year, maybe a little bit longer, but we haven't had a chance to say, man, this is what we're about. This is what we believe in. And so we felt like Nehemiah was a great book to say, this is how God did it there, and now this is how God is doing it here, and we can explain to you who we are as a church. There have been a whole bunch of things we've talked about. We've talked about why we preach on Sunday morning. We've talked about singing. We've talked about how God speaks through prayer, how God builds his people through every person getting involved, how it's important for different people with different gifts to serve in different places on the wall. We found in Nehemiah that every person had a place on the wall. Well, this week, as we kind of come to the end of how God builds his people, because the message next week is actually the fact that they start drifting really quick. But this week, what we're going to look at is the fact that in the midst of that, God always raises leaders. And the truth is that in any organization, but especially in the church, leaders will reproduce themselves. That what will take place is whatever the leaders are in the church, their values, their character, their ideas, their attitudes, we will Xerox that in the people that are part of the congregation. If you have leaders who don't have integrity, who love power, who think it's important to be the out front guy, that everybody thinks he's the best thing since sliced bread, that's the kind of values and morals we'll pass on. And so what does it look like for God's people to have godly leaders who love Jesus, who are following him? And what happens in the Nehemiah chapter 12 is that those leaders, the leaders of God's people in the book of Nehemiah, are named, and then there's a ceremony where the people celebrate and they dedicate the wall, but Nehemiah is stepping back and go, okay, I led, but here's all of your leaders, let's follow them. All right, and that's basically this entire chapter, what's going on. So if you have a Bible, turn to Nehemiah chapter 12, and we will look at what it looks like to be a leader in God's church and why leadership's important and what this means for you. All right, so if you don't have a Bible at the end of your rows, we have Bibles for you. We'll be on page 350 in that Bible. If you'll flip open to page 350, we'll read out of that. If you're at the end of the row, make sure everybody has a Bible, pass them down. And also, if you don't have a Bible at home, or you know somebody who doesn't have a Bible, those Bibles, we love giving them away. These are a gift to you. Take one, use it for yourself, throw it in your car, whatever it is, give them away. We love buying new Bibles because we know if somebody takes a Bible, they open it, God will speak to them through that. We believe that very strongly, that God has spoken and revealed himself through the scriptures, through the Bible. And if we read it and study it and understand it, God will speak to us. So, leadership in church is always a challenge, and church secretary sitting around, the phone rings, she picks it up, and this, you know, strong rural accent, basically, you know, First Baptist Church, can I help you? And this guy on the line said, I want to speak to the head hog of the trough. And she's like, what do you mean? He says, I want to speak to the head hog. And all of a sudden she realized, this man's talking about her pastor. How dare he call and say, I want to speak to the head hog. And she said, sir, at our church, we respect our leaders. I would prefer if you would call him pastor, brother, which please don't ever, minister, reverend. You can even call him by his name, but please don't call up here and just call him the head hog. We think that is irrespectable. And he said, well, I was just calling to speak to him because I wanted to give $1,000 to the church. She said, wait just a minute. I'll go find the big pig himself right now, all right? Sometimes that's the way it feels when you're leading God's people. You just feel like, you know, anything goes. And but it's important that we raise up right leadership. And that's what goes on in this chapter, Nehemiah chapter 12. We're going to read the entire chapter, which is 47 verses, and it is another long list of names. If you've been with us, there are a ridiculous number of names. And let me just, here's the point. Here's the big picture of Nehemiah. Why all the names? And the answer is this, because people matter. This story is not about systems and structures. The story of Nehemiah is that people matter to God. And so God spoke in the life of Nehemiah and the editors that put this book together to include all these names, because even though we'll read the names and just kind of go, I don't know these names and I'm never naming my kid that. Nehemiah is not a good book if you're like pregnant and having a baby. You go, I got to come up with a name for my child, because they're, you know, other than Bunny, which is a short name, but you shouldn't name your kid that either. The other names in here, you're like, nope, that one ain't going to work. But people matter to God, and so do the leaders. And so Nehemiah chapter 12, and what happens in the first several verses here is the leaders of God's people are going to be listed. So chapter 12, verse 1, it says, there are priests and Levites who came up with Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Jeshua, Sariah, Jeremiah, Ezra, Amariah, Maluk, Hattush, Shechaniah, Rehum, Meremoth, Iddo, Ginathoi, Abijah, Mimmin, wow. Madiah, Bilga, Shemaiah, Joirib, Jediah, Salu, Amak, Hilkiah, Jediah, and there were chiefs of the priests and the brothers in the days of Jeshua. Now, real quick, here's what's going on. He starts with saying, here's the leaders at the time of Zerubbabel and Jeshua. This is about 100 years earlier than the time of Nehemiah. And if you've ever been in a church, like a lot of times you walk into a traditional church and they will have the wall of their pastors. And you walk by and they'll have all these pictures of the pastors through the ages. And as you walk by, you'll see the picture, you know, of the guy who was like the founding pastor. And it's, you know, this guy who's sitting there. And then just all these pictures, and we'll name their names, say they were pastor from here to here. They were, you know, leader from here to here. And you can walk by and you can look at those pictures and you can find out a lot about the church by the hairstyles of the pastors most of the time. That was a joke. You're like, that's not funny. But, you know, over the years, churches will put these up, and you can see how God led his church through certain people and how long they were there. And you'll find some pastors who were there just a short period of time. You'll find some pastors who were there for 25 years. But over the years, God has led his people through these pastors, and that's what a church will do. Well, this is what this is. They're looking back 100 years to the time this guy showed up. The first wave of people who returned from Babylon after this exile, and they returned to Jerusalem with this guy named Zerubbabel, and they immediately, God began to raise the leaders of his people, these guys who were priests and Levites, okay? Now, just a real quick understanding of what's happening. Priests and Levites are basically from the same group of people, but some of them are the point leaders and some of them are the gritty, get things done leaders. And so the priests were the leaders who would literally kind of lead the temple worship. They would do some of the teaching and preaching, and they would lead the sacrifice. The Levites' job was to kind of serve under the priests to make sure all the nuts and bolts of ministry got taken care of and that things happened, okay? And he said, these are the people that they are, and he begins to list them in the days of Jeshua, who was the high priest at that time, the lead pastor. But there's this whole group of people now who are leading with Zerubbabel, who's kind of the leader politically, and Jeshua, who is the spiritual leader. And then in verse 12, it says, in the days of Joachim, now we're going to find out in just a minute, that's the son of Jeshua. He's the next high priest. We're priests and heads of fathers' houses. And then there's a list of names. And I'm not going to keep reading the list of names. Thumb through that, you see them. They do matter. Okay? But then he gets to I skipped verse 10. This is important. Verse 10 is a key verse here because it says, and Jeshua was the father of Joachim. Joachim was the father of Eliashib. Eliashib the father of Joiada. Joiada the father of Jonathan. And Jonathan the father of Jaddua. This is a list of the high priest, the lead leader, spiritual leader in Jerusalem from the time of Zerubbabel until actually about 200 years after the time of Nehemiah. When an editor has come in, somebody who's taken Nehemiah's writings and then put it into a book for us, he's come in and he's dropped in the midst of this chain of leadership that starts well before Nehemiah and gets well past Nehemiah so that people kind of understand this is where God led his leaders. These names are listed. In verse 12, it says, in the days of Joachim, we're priests. And he begins to list the people who were priests and Levites under Joachim. In verse 22, it says, in the days of Eliashib. This is the contemporary of Nehemiah. These are the leaders at the time of Nehemiah. And he begins to list them, all these different names. He begins to talk about what they do and the sort of leadership that they have, and some of them are singers, some of them lead in the temple, those sorts of things. And then verse 36, he says, these were in the days of Joachim, the son of Jeshua, son of Jozadak, and in the days of Nehemiah, the governor, and Ezra, the priest, and the scribe. In other words, they just gave the list of all the staff people, all the leaders, all the people who were leading God's people at the time of Ezra and Nehemiah, the two main leaders underneath this. That Ezra is kind of the spokesperson for God. Nehemiah is the kingly guy. And now they are leading, okay? And then we get this long list of names, people that God is using that have raised up who are leaders of God's people. But then they move to this thing where now they're going to dedicate the walls. The walls have been built. The city's been populated. They're going to have this big ceremony. And part of the ceremony is to say, here's your leaders. Let's do something pretty special with them. And so verse 20 says, it says, the dedication of the wall of Jerusalem, they sought Levites in all their places to bring them to Jerusalem to celebrate with the dedication with gladness, with thanksgivings and singings and cymbals and harps and lyres. And the sons and the singers gathered together from the districts surrounding Jerusalem, from the villages and the Netophathites, also from Beth Gilgal and from the region of Geba and Amaveth, for the singers had built for themselves villages around Jerusalem. And priests and the Levites purified themselves, and they purified the people at the gates of the wall. In other words, what had been going on is there had been, you know, little bourbon streets, little places where people like to get together and play music and hang out. And some of this music was for God. Some of it they just played because people like to hear it. But now they gather all the worship leaders, all the singers, and they bring them in and say, man, we're going to set up all these bands and people can come in. We're going to celebrate. And then the priests take leadership. And first of all, they purify themselves. They make sure their hearts, their lives are right before God. And then they begin to pray over and purify the people. They begin to offer some sacrifices so they can have this big celebration. They have singers in town. The priests are doing their job of leading the people. And then in verse 31, it says, then I brought the leaders of Judah up onto the walls and appointed two great choirs that gave thanks. One went to the south on the wall to the dung gate, and after them went Hoshiah and half the leaders of Judah, and Azariah, Ezra, Meshullam, Judah, Benjamin, Shemaiah, and Jeremiah, and certain priests' sons and trumpets, Zechariah, the son of Jonathan, the son of Shemaiah, the son of Mattaniah, the son of Micaiah, the son of Zakur, the son of Asaph, and his relatives, Shemaiah, Azarel, Meliah, Goliah, Mai, Nathaniel, Judah, and Hemani, with musical instruments of David, the man of God, as Ezra the scribe went before him. And before the fountain gate, they went up straight before them by the stairs of the city of David at the ascent of the wall above the house of David to the water gate on the east. The other choir of those who gave thanks went to the north, and I followed with them with half the people on the wall above the tower of the ovens and the broad wall and above the gate of Ephraim and by the gate of Yeshana and by the fish gate and the tower of Hananel and the tower of the hundred to the sheep gate. So they came to a halt at the gate guard. So both choirs of those who gave thanks stood at the house of God, and I and half the officials with me and the priests, and it gives another list of names here in verse 43, and I'm going to explain this in a minute, but I just want to read through it. And they offered great sacrifices that day and rejoiced, and rejoiced for God made them rejoice with great joy, and the women and children also rejoiced, and the joy of Jerusalem was heard from far away. Now, here's what just happened, because you're like, what is going on? This is what's going on. They want to dedicate the walls, but as they dedicate the walls, part of what they want to do is they want to say, now that we're in a city, now that the walls are built, now that the structure is here, we need godly leaders, and we want you to know who they are so you will follow them. So they start off with this big celebration where just a bunch of bands playing, a lot of music, and then they get these two great choirs, and they start right about the same spot in the city, which is at the southern end of Jerusalem. Okay? And they get these choirs with the bands behind them. And here's kind of the way I picture it. It's like, if you like rock and roll music, you follow that band. If you like country music, you follow this band. This kind of way we're going to do it. But the first thing that happens is he says, here's your leaders. They're going to go stand on the wall. They're going to be at the front. And they go, like all the leaders now are standing on top of the wall. They've climbed up on this 8-foot wall. It's 8-foot wide. They're standing on top of the wall. And he says, here's your leaders. Here's the priests. Here's the Levites. Here's the people who are going to lead God's people. And then after them, the band gets up there, the choir. They're singing. They're celebrating. And they go in two different directions with Ezra, who is the book of Ezra is named after him. He is one of the two key leaders in this big story. Leads one group around, Nehemiah leads the other group around, and now around the walls of the city, we have two great choirs with all these musicians. They're being led by, Nehemiah's out front of one, Ezra's out front of the other, right behind them are all these priests and Levites, the leaders of God's people, then the band, and then the rest of the people hop on the wall and they walk around and they follow them. All right? So now you got these two groups. They're singing, they're praising, they're worshiping their God. They're celebrating the greatness of their God as they're standing on the wall that is the evidence that God has been at work in their midst. And God is forming them as a people, but they, watch this, they are following their leaders. And they end up back at the temple, which is on the north end of the city. And so now these two groups, they meet. And then they go, come off the walls. Everybody comes off the walls. They keep singing, they go down to the temple and they begin to worship their God. They begin to offer sacrifices. And now the leaders of God's people, the priests and Levites, begin to live out the duties, the ministry roles that God has given them in front of the people, on behalf of the people. The last several verses of this chapter says, on that day, we appointed, and it begins to list all the jobs that the priests and the Levites, the leaders, had and how they would fulfill their roles. And the whole chapter is pointing us to the fact that as God has built his people, this last big thing is that they appointed leaders and the leadership multiplied itself. And now everybody knows who the leaders are. The leaders are serving where they need to serve and God's people are being led by godly leaders who are growing in their faith, okay? And so the question is, what about us? Because we are not going to, like, you know, at the end of service say, all right, Scott Holdergraver, you take a group of people, we're going to form a choir. Y'all walk around Eureka that way. And Scott, you know, you take a group. Scott Nager, you take a group. We're going to walk around and we're going to meet somewhere in the center and we're all going to. But what does that mean? What does it look like to have leadership? And the truth is that even though the form may be different, the bottom line is that leadership in God's people still matters. And we need to make sure that we're honoring God and following him in the way we develop and raise up leaders, okay? Because leaders do reproduce themselves. You know, even in our world, it's just kind of crazy around the world right now how over and over, both locally, nationally, internationally, the number of stories that just keep happening about people who claim to be leaders on behalf of God in the church end up having these crazy, horrible moral flaws. Here in St. Louis, just this last week, it hit the news. In fact, it was last Sunday night, it hit the news that a dude who was a pastor, he'd been a pastor of churches in St. Louis for a long, long time. And part of my faith heritage tribe, I grew up in Baptist churches. Part of that faith heritage tribe, this dude was pastor of Baptist churches for a long, long time. And he'd been indicted up in North St. Louis County because he was swindling people in his church. To the tune of close to $100,000 he had pocketed from money that people had loaned him and given him for various causes, and he just put that in his pocket and used it for other issues, okay? And I don't know all the details, but I just looked at that and went, wow. And for those of you who know Jim Breeden is now trying to lead that church through the brokenness of dealing with the fact that a guy that they looked up to that was their leader ended up being a person who had really big integrity issues. Around the world, it's not too hard to figure out that the Catholic Church has been struggling with problems of leadership. Time Magazine cover article this week, once again, is how's the Catholic Church going to deal with this crisis in their leadership? And the bottom line is leadership matters because leadership reproduces itself. And so as God builds Genesis, what does it look like for God to work in this? And just kind of out of this, I want to share a couple real brief leadership lessons that are... they're in Nehemiah, but they're throughout the Bible, that the church needs to be aware of. What is it, as we look for leaders, as we develop people as leaders, what needs to happen? What does it look like for us to raise up the right people to lead God's people? And then I want to talk about how our philosophy of leadership, how we do it here. So the first thing is this: leaders have to reproduce themselves. The importance here is that leaders have to reproduce themselves. What happens here in Nehemiah is it would have been very easy for Nehemiah and Ezra to say, all right, we're the two dudes. We're leading. We'll just have a bunch of grunt work people around us, but we are your leaders. But if Nehemiah and Ezra would have done that, the ability for God's people to grow and develop would have been hindered massively. And it is important, no matter where we are in leadership in a church, that leaders are always trying to raise up people who will replace them or actually multiply what they're doing. Leaders need to reproduce themselves. One of the challenges we have here at Genesis is the fact that we have a lot of people who are amazing doers, but we need to raise up people who are leaders so that the doers, instead of just doing something, we are reproducing what we're doing multiple times, all right? And so leaders have to reproduce themselves. The second truth that we find throughout this story and throughout the Bible is that the character of the leader is more important than the gifting of the leader. At Genesis, it's just so easy, any church. It is so easy to have somebody who is dynamic and gifted in an area of leadership, and because they have strong gifts, man, they've got a great voice, or man, they can compel people, or to say, well, because you're gifted, we're gonna put you into leadership. But what we find in scriptures is this call to make sure leaders of people are people of character, deep character, before you begin to put them in leadership. And so the character of the leader is more important than the gifting of the leadership. In this story, one of the really interesting things, in verse 26, look at that real quick. I'll just show it to you. It's a very interesting thing. It says, these were in the days of Joachim, the son of Jeshua, son of Jozadak, in the days of Nehemiah and the governor Ezra, the priest and the scribe. And you read that and go, well, all right, these are in the days of this one guy, and he was a high priest during the time of Nehemiah. But the problem with that is if you read the whole story, his son is actually the high priest through the entire story of Nehemiah. Eliashib is the high priest. But in this verse, they put his dad, this Joachim, as the high priest that's listed here. And the question is, why did they skip over Eliashib here? And we're gonna find out the answer next time we hit Nehemiah, because we find out in chapter 13 of Nehemiah that Eliashib had some character problems. Eliashib is connected with the wrong people. He is developing relationships that are a hindrance, and he is leading God's people away from their faith in God alone. And here, even in this text, it's like, you know, we're not going to credit the main leader to him. We're going to go back to his dad because he was a good guy. He was a godly dude, okay? Character matters in the leaders of God. Number three, leaders set the tone for the people's attitude toward truth, authority, and worship. In other words, in the church of God, a leader's attitude towards truth will be passed on. So if you have a pastor or leaders who, like, they open the Bible and they pull a verse out and then they go talk about whatever they want to, and they won't look to the scriptures, or they misuse scriptures, and they're not just faithful to the Bible, you will produce a people who see the Bible as just a springboard to get whatever they want. Your attitude about truth is going to come from our attitude about truth. Your attitude about authority, this is true in the home. As parents, your children are going to learn their attitude about authority through their attitude about you. If they don't treat you with respect and there's no response to that, they will not respect any authority, and ultimately they will not respect the authority of God, because eventually it will be God who says, this is what I want from you. And if kids have spent their whole life going, but I don't want to do that, I like this and I'm going to go my way, and nothing ever happens and they are never developed this healthy attitude of respect towards authority, eventually God is going to be the one who's calling, and they're going to, you know, as teenagers and young adults or even old adults, they're going to go, I don't want to do that. I want to go play with my own toys and do what I want to do. And they've learned that through the leaders in their life and how their leaders represented authority and called them to respect authority. Same is true in church. Leaders who are not respectable will lead to a crisis in people's values about living under the authority of God. And so leaders set the tone for that. If you're in a church where all leaders are just a bunch of scoundrels, it is very hard to respect God as the ultimate authority of life. Leaders also set the tone for our attitudes of worship. We see this all through the book here. Leaders who are not living a life of worship, it will be hard for people who are part of that church, that people of God, to do the same. Fourth thing here is that a plurality of leaders gives the church the greatest opportunity to fulfill her call. That many of you may have grown up in a church where it was like a point pastor, he's a guy, and then there's a few guys who, like, underneath him, who do what they want to do, and but they're always answering to him. We just don't believe in that style of leadership. Now, in terms of gifting for Genesis, I am the teaching pastor, so I'm the guy who gets to get up here each week. But we have a plurality of male elders, and we work together, and that, you know, they can do things like, they have reprimanded me for some things. I've said, hey, we don't like it when you do this. Pray about it, but cut it out. They have the authority to fire me. I hope they never use that authority, and I pray that I'll never give them a reason where they have to. But we work as a plurality. I see myself as a leader among equals in this relationship with our elders, and there's a plurality. But the cool thing, even with us having four elders, we have guys with different gifts, different styles, different leadership abilities, different leadership passions. And it is a coming together of that in equality, and that really leads to a really healthy place for us as we figure out what it looks like to lead God's people. So we just think of plurality as here. Hearing this, what really, one of the things that happens is Nehemiah raises up about 100 new leaders and basically says, I've been doing this, but now I got to give most of this away to other people who can lead God's people alongside me. And then the fifth thing is this, that the goal for a leader is to follow Jesus and to lead others to do the same. This is the mantra here. We talk, this is what we say all the time. That our goal in leadership is to follow Jesus and to lead other people to do the same. And ultimately, that's what I hope will happen with no matter where you're at. If you are an elder, if you are serving as a ministry team head, if you're a community group leader, your goal is first of all that you are following Jesus yourself. And as you follow Jesus yourself, that you are reproducing that in the lives of other people, as you're pulling other people alongside of you. You're growing, but you're also part of pulling other people towards being more like Jesus, trusting him, living for him. And so this is kind of how we do things, our attitude and values about leadership. This is what we've learned in Nehemiah, this is the type of leader he was, and it's also what we want to see happen in our church, okay? And so, just real quick, what does that look like structurally here? And our leadership structure has kind of, if you want to call it, four levels. And I'm just going to tell you what they are, how we get to those people. And then what I'm going to do this week is on the blog, I'm actually going to post a very lengthy paper that we wrote early in the days of Genesis that defines this very, very thoroughly. You can go read that paper that we have published about what our philosophy and beliefs about leadership are. But our leadership structure, it looks like this. First of all, we have a senior pastor. Now, most of you are thinking, that's you. No, it's not. Who's our senior pastor? Jesus, okay? Now that sounds all cool and quaint and spiritual and like, oh, Jesus is our senior pastor, but we actually get that from scripture. In 1 Peter chapter 5, it talks about Jesus being the chief shepherd. And that passage where it talks about Jesus being the chief shepherd is in a passage where it talks about leaders. And the word chief shepherd is actually shepherd. The word pastor is the Greek word for shepherd. And so it talks about Jesus. And so ultimately, no matter who we are, what we do, we are about Jesus. We want to look to him as our key leader. Jesus said, I will build my church. This is not Mike's church. It is not the elder's church. It's not your church. It's God's church. It's Jesus' church. We look to him. He is our ultimate leader. We follow him. We look at the way he leads. We look at what he did with his life. We look at how he laid his life down for us. And we see that his style of leadership is what we want to be. But we also always want to point people to him. I do not want a bunch of followers of Mike. That creates chaos. Trust me. You guys notice, a lot of you as parents, you know that there are things about you that drive you crazy. Like you look at your own life, you're like, oh, I hate seeing this in me. And there are things about you that make you feel okay, comfortable with yourself. And as your kids are growing up in your home, they're like you. They have your DNA, but they also grow up under your leadership. And the things that you're kind of comfortable with yourself, when you see that in your kids, you're like, oh, that's so sweet, that's so cute. But when you see the parts of you that just drive you crazy about yourself and your kids, you just want to throw up and choke them, right? Because we're flawed, broken, hurting people. We need the gospel. I don't want followers of Mike. I want people to see Jesus. He is our leader. He is the chief shepherd. He is the one we want to point people to. He is also the one who sets the tone of leadership. And so we look at how Jesus leads. And Jesus, the way he led was bottom up, giving himself away, sacrificing himself. Servant leadership. Jesus hanging out with his disciples one day. It's the last night of his life. And instead of showing up and go, all right, I'm Jesus. I'm the head honcho. You guys need to follow me and do what I say. Jesus grabs a towel, a basin of water, and tells all of his disciples to take their sandals off and he begins to wash their feet. He begins to serve them. And in ancient cultures, people walk sandals. You'd walk miles. You'd get sweaty feet. Imagine how nasty and smelly and caked on mud that is. And what they would do is the lowest servant in a house, that servant's job was to wash the feet of the people when they came in to stay in the house to eat, that sort of thing. And Jesus basically takes the form of the lowest servant. And then he basically looks at his disciples and says, as you lead, here's the model. That's the challenge. Leadership in the church is about Jesus. We are pointing people to him, but we've got to learn our model of leadership from him. And so Jesus he is the chief shepherd. He is the one we're following. This is his church, and we don't claim ownership over it. We want people to follow him and learn from him. But to get there, God raises up human leaders. Second level of leadership for us is elders. These are male leaders who fit the qualifications laid out in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and Titus chapter 1. There's a whole list of qualifications, but the top qualification is this, that they are to be above reproach. And then there's all these character traits. And if you were to read those lists, and I want to encourage you to go read those lists. If you were to read those lists, both of the lists contains a list of character traits that ought to be true or becoming true of every person who's a follower of Jesus. It's not like the Bible's saying, all right, average people are over here, but elders, pastors, they're over here. Now, what it's saying is that everybody needs to be moving towards this, but there are some people in your congregation that have had a life of growth, of development, so that their life and their character looks very much like this list. And those are the type of people you want. Here's the guys you want as elders. Ladies, listen to this. The guys you want as elders at church, when you have a 15-year-old daughter, and you were hanging out with that daughter, and you go, you know, someday you're going to meet a guy and he's going to make all the difference in the world. First of all, you want her daddy to be this type of guy. But second of all, you want to go to church and go, you see that dude over there? He's an elder. You go find a guy who's like him and marry that guy. Those are the people you want to be your elders. Now, God has raised up three other guys, four of us to be elders. I hope my life represents that. These other three guys absolutely do. I watched their families. We tested them over time. We want to see their character. I've seen all of them in places where pressure was up and seeing how they responded, and they all respond way better to me in those than I do in those situations. Just to let you know. We have four guys total that are elders. I'm going to ask them to stand this morning. Back in the back is Bob Lancaster. You guys know Bob, and Bob is one of our elders. Right here's John Park. John is one of our elders. And then we got a picture of Leon up here, okay? Because Leon is in Tennessee. So this guy is our other elder. And the four of us are called by God. We all felt a sense of God's call to lead Genesis. Our goal is to lead you to Jesus. So Jesus, our senior pastor, elders, third level is what we call servant leaders or deacons. We are working on what this means. One of our real goals in the next year or so is to come up with a real clear direction on defining these people. But these are people who God is raising up, both men and women who love Jesus, who are serving in key point leadership and ministry, okay? And then the last level we have are members that really ultimately we believe every person is a leader. When you become a member of the church, that your goal is to follow Jesus and to start leading others to do the same. And in terms of character, your character is being developed so that you become more and more like Christ and find new and other ways to lead God's people and be a part of this, okay? And in the midst of this, that God is, we're always reproducing leadership. So as I close this morning, let me tell you about some of our challenges, because here we are. Nehemiah had you know, they got up on the walls, they walked around the city, said, here's your leaders. And the leadership had multiplied from this one dude who led the people to this throng of leaders who they're singing around and all this kind of stuff. What does this look like for us? And we have a couple key challenges. And I've already kind of mentioned, but I'm just going to hit them real quick because I want you to start praying with us about this, okay? So here's the first one. The first one is that when we started Genesis, we had a whole bunch of people, and we are so deeply grateful for these people. They were unbelievable doers. In other words, if Mike said, hey, I need this, they would take the ball, they would run with it, they would make it happen, and there wasn't anything that we needed to get done that didn't get done. But what we need to do in our church is we need to go from the transition of doers to leaders. Because first of all, if we don't move from doers to leaders, kind of leading these areas, the challenge will be that we kind of bottleneck it, and we will only be able to do so much ministry. But then other people, like if you're new to the church, it's like, but I don't really know how to get plugged in and how to serve and how to do that kind of stuff. So we just need to figure out what that looks like. We have some people who are doers, and they really have a lot of leadership gifts, and we just need to help them, train them, equip them so that they can move from somebody who just does the ministry to somebody who is now gathering people, getting them connected, finding ways to help them serve, right? So this is a big challenge for us. Alongside that is the challenge that we need to figure out what it looks like to identify people that we will call deacons, servant leaders. The word deacon in the New Testament means a servant. I always found it very funny. I grew up in churches where there was a board of deacons, and the one thing they did all the time was meet, which is weird because, all right, your title is servant. Your main job is to attend a meeting. Just something backwards about that in my book. But anyway, servants ought to be doing. They ought to have their sleeves rolled up and doing. We've got to figure out what that looks like and really identify a process for those people. All right, so that's part of what we have to do here. And then a third challenge that we just have that we need to figure out is just then the multiplication of those leaders, that we see new people stepping into leadership, jumping in, serving, okay? And all of this, so that we are more and more effective at living out the gospel, of following Jesus, and leading other people to do the same. We want to multiply that so that we are discipling and helping people grow in their faith. And the way that takes place in God's people is the multiplication of leaders. And so some of you need to pray about, God, where's my leadership role? I'm doing, but maybe I ought to be leading. What does that look like for me? Some of you are really new to the faith, and you're like, oh my gosh, this is totally freaking me out. I'm just still trying to figure out where to find the book of Exodus, and I'm not ready for that. Great. Find leaders who will lead you forward. Get behind people who are following Jesus. Find those people and be part of community with them, grow in the faith, all that kind of stuff, okay? Because one of the key ways that God builds his people is through raising up good, godly leaders whose character is being transformed, who love Jesus and who are following him, and they grab people and they bring them with them, all right? That's what we want to see. That's our prayer. I'm going to pray, and we're going to celebrate Jesus because he is the one we're following. And we're going to sing to him. We're going to worship him. We're going to celebrate him. As we do that, we will collect an offering, because an offering is an act of worship where we say, God, you've given so much to us. We're going to give back to you. And as we collect the offering, if you're a guest, we do not ask you or expect you to give. I want to encourage you that if you haven't filled out the top 10 list, we are now doing voting for our summer series. We're going to start in July with a summer sermon series called Top 10. We're going to do 10 topics that you chose. And we've got a voting sheet out. If you haven't gotten one of those, make sure you pick one up. You can put it in the offering as that goes by, or you can hand that to me. We actually will also have a way online for you to vote. Just don't stuff the ballot box, okay? Vote once, twice, whatever, when you're here at church, once online. But don't go on vote 45 times, because if you go vote 45 times, we will... with the size of our church, we will do the things that you want. And that's not very nice. So, but use the offering as a way to turn that in if you want to. But our offering is an act of worship, but our service is a gift to those of you who are visiting. We don't expect you to give or want you to. So let me pray, and we're going to sing. Lord, we love you. We praise you, and I thank you for the call to leadership. And I thank you for the guys you've raised up to be leaders here. And I just pray, Lord, that you will, no matter where we are in this process, you will help us figure out what it looks like to follow you and lead others. In your name I pray, amen. Now we're gonna stand and sing. Like, we're not gonna jump on the wall, but we are gonna stand and sing and celebrate with our band and sing really loud, all right? So stand with us and sing.